Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Wichita, Kansas, and in 1964, became the first high schooler to run the mile in under 4 minutes. In 1966, he was named by Sports Illustrated its Sportsman of the Year. From 1996 to 2006, he served in the U.S. House of Representatives. The author of Heroes Among Us, his name, Congressman Jim Ryan. And we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Jim Ryan, former congressman from the 2nd District of Kansas. Jim, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Jack, it's my pleasure.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Well, I grew up in Wichita, Kansas, and I was one of those, you might say, ambitious young men, but at the same time would be characterized as the school nerd. So I wanted my life to amount to something, and something within the giftings God gave me or my chemistry sort of pointed me towards sports. And I tried every sport as a child growing up, baseball, but I was cut from the church baseball team, so not a great future there. And then in junior high, I was invited out for the junior high basketball team. I tried out. First day of practice, the coach wanted to have a meeting in his office. I went in. I was excited. I knew I was going to be discovered. And, you know, he in essence said to me, hey, you've got another couple years before your game's going to develop, maybe by the time you enter high school. So I left deflated. And the only other sport available for me then was junior high track and field. And I tried to make that team. I had started out as a sprinter, and once I noticed that the coach was cutting the team, I moved to become a hurdler, and before I got cut from the hurdles, I became a high jumper, and so therefore, I went through all the junior high events that were available at Curtis Junior High, never made the team, but that was the beginning of it all.
What's the biggest thing, Jim, your mom taught you, and what's the biggest thing Dad taught you?
Well, my mom and Dad taught me discipline. They taught me hard work. You know, they were wonderful parents. They did everything they could to make our family a great family, and those characteristics stuck with me through all of my life as an athlete and now as an adult. But, you know, they set the example, and then they lived it out by the way they conducted their lives. And so, you know, by going to church every Sunday night, Wednesday night, all the other things in life that would, you know, encourage the concept of hard work, but, you know, giving your best in everything you do.
You were famous, Jim, for your training techniques and regimen. How many hours a week did you run and how many miles?
Well, we didn't really measure it in terms of hours. I mean, you could do the math and find that it's pretty extensive, but it started out the first year as a sophomore in high school running about 50 miles a week. The second year I ran about 80 miles a week. By the time I was a senior, it was 100 miles a week. So, you know, if you consider, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, and then on Saturday and Sunday, maybe a total of 3 hours, you know, the math adds up pretty significantly. But I think the most important thing was that, you know, when I was in junior high, failing from all those teams that I was trying out for, I'd go to bed at night and I'd say, dear God, I really want my life to amount to something. And I would say this to your listeners, you know, don't be afraid to call on God's name and ask for help. And so I'd go to bed at night and say, dear God, if you've got a plan for my life, I'd appreciate it if you show up sooner than later. It's not going well. By the way, if you could do it in sports, that would really be great. So, you know, that was the thing that got me started, and I look back on all the experiences I had, and I can look back now and attribute the success I had to that very small seed that was planted in prayer, and I'm so grateful for that because I had a wonderful coach in high school who, his name was Bob Timmons. He was willing to challenge each of his athletes, so it wasn't just me, but each of his athletes, to go beyond their comfort zone. And so that was a very important part of my career as a young athlete.
Let's go back to June 5th, 1964, 51 days, almost to the date. You're a junior at Wichita High School East. Tell us what happened June 5th, 1964.
I had run well enough in the spring of 1964 to be invited to competition that was not high school competition. In fact, it was at the Compton Invitational, which had some of the best milers in the world there, and some questioned whether I should be there because I was so young and inexperienced. And so I not only was I nervous, but we had prepared all spring hoping we could run well. Gun goes off for the start of the race. In the first 600 yards, a lap and a half, I'm in the mix, so to speak. But I'm also one of those guys, because of a loss of hearing at the age of about five when I had the measles, I lost about half of my hearing. I also have very little balance. I was bumped by another runner at about the 600-yard mark, had to slow down, stepped up on the infield, got back in the race. To make the story short, I finished eighth in the race, and it was a long race. There were seven in front of me, and I was number eight. When I crossed the finish line, I was disappointed, but just a few minutes later, the announcer came on and said, "We've had something that's never happened before. We've had, for the very first time, a high school boy to run under 4 minutes." So that prayer prayed in junior high was beginning to be answered on June 5th, 1964, as I was the first high school boy to run under 4 minutes.
51 years later, Jim, only four other high school boys have also broken 4 minutes in the mile. Why so few?
Actually, there have been five now. We just had another one just recently. And, there's no easy answer to that. Quite honestly, it's one of those things that I know when I was the first one, and then you had Tim Danielson and Marty LaCorey a few years after I ran into 4 minutes for the first time. I think we all thought that the door was open for that particular time, but it just didn't continue to develop. So I think we all through the years kind of wondered and were surprised, honored that we were the ones, the first ones to do it. You know, Jack, there's no easy answer. It could be training. It could be change of interest in the sport of track and field. But in any event, it's one of those things that still captures the public attention and still has great, resonates very large within the sport of track and field.
We're talking to Jim Ryan, who in 2011 was named by ESPN the best high school athlete of all time, beating out Tiger Woods and LeBron James. Tall Cotton, Jim Ryan. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasul, and we're with Jim Ryan. Jim, let's go back July 29th, 1966. You're 19 years old. You're in Berkeley, California. What happened?
It was a year in which I had been running well, and we were chasing the world record in the mile. And so at that particular meet in Berkeley, I was able to help with some others set up a paced race. I had three other young men within the race, Wade Bell, Tom Von Rudin, Rich Roma was the other one. But anyway, all three of them agreed to help set the pace early on in the race. In other words, that meant that they would help carry the stress of being the leader and maintaining the time. And then my goal was to, so to speak, set off their hip and draft off of them and hopefully get to the half, maybe three-quarters of the race, fast enough to at least have a shot at the world record. And by the grace of God, on that day, it was a new world record at 3:51.3. First American since another Kansan, by the way, another Kansan by the name of Glenn Cunningham. So there have only been two Americans to ever hold the world record at a mile, and they've both been Kansans.
Also, by the grace of God, after that race,
yes,
a pretty girl outside the stadium asked for your autograph.
Well, to me, that's the highlight of the event. As I was leaving the track, since there was the uniqueness of being the first American, again since Glenn Cunningham, which would have been in the 1930s, to set the world record on the mile, there was a lot of media attention, a lot of questions, autographs. About 3 hours passed as I left the track. I went to the tent where all my warmer gear had been stored, only to find out that someone had stolen everything. And so off I ran across the field, heading back to the dorm where the United States team was being housed. And this young girl asked, she said, "Oh, hi, Jim. May I have your autograph?" Now, she was accompanied by her brother, and just as soon as she said that, she said, "You know, oh, by the way, I go to Kansas State University." Now, you have to understand there's a great rivalry between my school, University of Kansas, and Kansas State. And so I turned to her. I didn't think much of it at the time. I said, "Well, you know, how about later?" At that point, I was exhausted and tired, and I'm grateful that there was a later. It came on a blind date, Thanksgiving of 1966, and she would be my wife for the last 46 years. My wife, Ann, she's been a marvelous helpmaid and partner and going through all the things with running and track and field, and then as a congressional wife, she is really a gift from God to me.
How did you celebrate that night, Jim?
You know, as an amateur, we didn't really have any, you didn't get anything other than, in fact, the way you could tell the success of an amateur runner in those days was by the number of wristwatches they had. And so even when you set the world record, there's not really any reward other than the personal satisfaction. And I think sometimes, you know, we have a tendency in society to think if it's not monetarily given and something's large, then was it really worth it? Well, to me, it was great just to be able to see God answer that prayer, to be able to see what Coach Timmons taught me, establishing goals that are outside of your comfort zone, and then to see him lived. On that particular occasion that night, I had a friend who took me out to dinner. That was how we celebrated. I mean, we happened to be while we were waiting for dinner in front of a television, and I was watching Walter Cronkite do the evening news. And in the process of the news, he broke in and said, "Well, we've had something that hasn't happened in America since the 1930s. An American has now brought back to the United States a world record at 1 mile, Jim Ryan," and they showed a little clip of the race. And as I sat there and watched it, I thought, wow, that's pretty significant. I mean, you know, you think of it as being important and good and wonderful, but then when it's a break-in on the national news, you go, wow, that's pretty special.
We're talking to Jim Ryan from 1964 to 1972. He graced the cover of Sports Illustrated 7 times. Also, Jim, you were blessed to participate in 3 Olympics, 1964 Tokyo, 1968 Mexico, 72 Munich. What's the best part of participating in the Olympics?
Well, I think one of the highlights of all 3 of those Olympics is simply being able to represent the United States. You know, we have a wonderful country. We have a great country, and I think if people would travel outside of the United States and come back, many times their appreciation is really greatly improved. I know when I competed on the United States team and we compete against the Russians and the East Germans and then the Scandinavian countries, I'd come back to this country and I'd almost always get down on the ground and almost kiss the ground because we have a great country. I mean, it's unique in history and it's very special. And yes, we have trouble and problems to work through, but, you know, it's still a wonderful country. So for me, the highlight of those 3 different Olympics, or one of them, was being able to represent the United States, represent them in the Olympic Games, and be able to do so in a very proud way.
How do you explain, Jim, the uniqueness and the magic of the Olympics?
I don't know if there's any easy answer other than, I know as a U.S. athlete, and I think I can speak for pretty much all Olympians, but let's say a U.S. Olympian, it's a real challenge to qualify for the Olympics. It's a real challenge to make the Olympic team, and then a real challenge to get into the medal round. So, you know, all of those particular characteristics heighten the interest of the public and you as an athlete. You know, it's very unique, it's very unusual, and it's a tremendous honor to be able to do it.
Let's go through each one. 1964, you're 17 years old. You go to Tokyo. To this day, the youngest American male track athlete to ever qualify for the Olympics. What happened to you in the 64 Tokyo Olympics?
I was able to get through the first and into the second round of competition at the distance of 1,500 meters, which is about 110 yards short of a mile. It's the Olympic distance. I made it through the first round, got into the second round, did not qualify for the final round. But quite honestly, for a 17-year-old getting that far, I was honored to do that. To me, the highlight was this, because Tokyo was supposed to host the next Olympics in 1940, and because of the war, it did not happen. And so the Japanese were very intent on making sure the rest of the world saw that they weren't a warmongering country. They were wonderful people. And so when the Olympics is over, the government of Japan, knowing that many of the athletes really hadn't had a chance to see their wonderful country, they arranged for a huge bus tour leaving the Olympic Village and driving through Tokyo out towards Mount Fuji and back so we could all see what Japan was all about. And so it was like 6 o'clock in the morning. We were all gathered on our buses and leaving. Well, they had announced to the public where we were going. And so as we went along on the streets, school children were waving flags, and we're waving from the buses. And, you know, they're tossing things to us. We're popping buttons off our jacket or anything that said U.S., giving it to the children. It was really, for me, the highlight of what the Olympics should all be about, and that is here we have a wonderful competition, and let's look at the wonderful countries that we're competing in. Japan was really trying to turn a new page in terms of people understanding who they were.
1968, Mexico City. What happened there?
Mexico City was the Olympics in which I won a silver medal. I was very honored to do that. Again, you have three rounds. The difference in Mexico City is that it should never have been held in Mexico City. They were at an elevated Olympics. In other words, they were held at an altitude of 7,200 feet. And I challenge your listeners, if they want to know what it's like to run at 7,200 feet, go to Colorado, Colorado Springs, or a little higher, and then try and run a mile. You're going to find there's very little oxygen. I finished second. The man who won the gold medal because he was an altitude living athlete. To this day, I consider that one of my best races ever, and I'm tremendously honored to have won a silver medal in the Olympic Games.
And the man that beat you was Kip Kenyo.
That's correct. And an interesting story that goes with that, in the race as it developed, a young man from Kenya by the name of Ben Jipcho was tasked by his amateur association to go out at a suicide pace, trying to draw everybody out and get into what we call oxygen debt. Oxygen debt means that you can't really recover until you sit down and rest. And so I stayed off the pace and, you know, fortunately ended up with a silver medal. A few years later, Ben Jipcho came to me and he apologized. He asked forgiveness. He said, Jim, I should never have done what I did. It was against the Olympic creed, and I asked your forgiveness, and I gave it to him. I said, look, I'm very honored to have a silver medal. He said, what I should have done is let the race be between the two of you instead of me doing what I did, influencing the outcome. And I thought that was very brave of him coming from his country. To say that to me.
1972, Munich. What happened, Jim?
Munich, I was the favorite to win the Olympic gold medal, an event that an American has not won since 1908, and to this day we still have not won. In the opening round of the competition, with about a lap and a quarter to go, that balance thing when you have a loss of hearing, I was bumped by another runner, fell, hit my head on the side of the track, got up after being temporarily stunned, finished the race, but did not qualify for the next round of competition. The best part of that particular story, though, is what happened on May 18th, 1972, and it contributes greatly to the story. My wife, Ann, and I became Christians. You know, we'd attended church all of our lives, but we realized that what was more than going to church, what we needed was a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. So we became Christians May 18th, 1972. And so as the summer proceeded, my whole goal was to win, but to give God the honor because I knew he'd given me the talent. I wouldn't be where I was if he hadn't. The real lesson out of that is that I would not like to do it again, but as a result of that fall and not being reinstated, after the race was over, Ann got out of the stands of roughly 80,000 people. It had been the terrorist attack in the Olympic Village in 1972. Somehow she got out of the stands. Came down to the athletes' tunnel where we were passing to the track, warm-up track. We met, we prayed. The coaches said you'd be reinstated. I was not reinstated. In fact, we tried to find someone to write the reinstatement, and a name some of your listeners may remember. We walked towards the ABC television booth, and I had made an acquaintance with a man by the name of Howard Cosell. And so Howard was a really fine attorney. He wrote a reinstatement letter. But the long and the short of it all is that they said, well, why don't you come back in 4 years and try again? And that's where our walk with Christ really began, because we had a choice to make, either to be bitter or to not leave that as where our life would end. And we chose to forgive and go on. And so the Munich Olympics was a difficult experience, but our lives are enriched as a result of the things that took place there.
And I quote now Jim Ryan about that experience, quote, God allowed me to be disqualified from the world's most renowned athletic competition to show me how to become a real winner. Jim Ryan. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Jim Ryan, who in 1966 was named Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year and also received the Sullivan Award for the Best Amateur Athlete in the United States. Jim, winning that SI Sportsman of the Year 1966, what was that like?
Well, it was very special. And just for your listeners, let me give you the background on it. The Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year takes into account amateurs, professionals, everyone. And the fact that I was being considered and then won was one of those things, as I look back on it, I guess was a measure of how great the gift God gave me was and how unique it was in history. And, of course, that would play into ESPN naming me High School Athlete of the Century. You know, they were unique times, and by the grace of God, everything came together. We ran well. But the Sports Illustrated one takes into account professionals and amateurs, whereas the Sullivan Award as the Best Amateur is just for the amateur athletes. And I'm very honored to have both of those.
There's only been 8 track and field athletes, so honored. You talked about you and Ann getting a true faith. Talk to us about the role faith has played in your life, Jim Ryan.
Well, it's played a huge role for us. You know, for one, when we had just become a Christian, and I mentioned to you the Munich Olympics, that was a challenge in which we had to make the decision in faith to go forward, trusting that though we had fallen, God was not against us. You know, I refer to this just as a look back for a moment. I'll come back to the part with Ann. I thank God for failures in life, not that we want to embellish them, but had I not have failed from making the baseball team or not making the basketball team or the junior high track and field team, I may never have become a runner. So failures often give you the perspective of really finding out where your true talents and interests are. But moving ahead, after Ann and I became Christians, you know, we started realizing that it was a faith walk and that a lot of things that you would have to do or would want to do in life would require you getting beyond your comfort zone. And to do that in a walk with Jesus Christ is a marvelous experience. It's very challenging, but then you start finding out that it's an adventure, that it's a journey. We talk about that in our running camps, at Jim Ryan Running Camps, and they can go to the website, Ryan, R-Y-U-N, running.com, R-Y-U-N, running.com. And Ann and I both challenge him with this, is that it's wonderful to set goals because they should be something that's challenging to you, but don't forget the journey. It's the people you meet along the way. And so that's been true with our faith walk. We've had wonderful coaches, wonderful people that we've met, and that would lead into our first run for Congress in 1996. You know, I would never have imagined as a young boy that I'd ever have the privilege of even running for office or then eventually serving in Congress. But for us it was a step of faith because it would be enormous career change, and yet God was in the middle of it and we had the privilege of serving in the 2nd District of Kansas for 10 years.
Speaking of which, tell us about the people of the 2nd District of Kansas.
Well, they're wonderful people. You know, we considered it a great privilege to be able to serve and to help them. It's sort of a funny story, Jack. My first term in office was during the 2nd inauguration of President Clinton. And as a freshman congressman, we all were sitting there listening, getting ready for everything to take place with the inauguration. And I remember sitting beside a person from the other party. I'm Republican. And he walked in and he said, "Oh, you're that runner guy." And I said, "Yes, sir, I am." He said, "Now, are you going to do the Republican thing?" And I said, "Well, what would that be?" And he said, "Actually, go back to the district and listen to your constituents." And I said, "Well, yes, that's my job description. Don't you do that?" And he said, "No, I go home and watch television." And so, you know, it really was a setting of the stage of a choice we had to make, and we wanted to do that. I went back every weekend. We had town hall meetings, wonderful people. Generally, what they want to know is what's actually going on in Congress and where do you stand on the issues. They know who you are because they vote for you, but now they're going to see you in action. So that was part of, you know, that 10-year journey is spending time back in the district because mine was large from Oklahoma to Nebraska and kind of the eastern third of the state of Kansas. I would go 300 or 400 miles on a weekend covering town hall meetings and talking to wonderful people.
You served from 1996 through 2007. What's the biggest thing you learned in those 10 years, Jim?
Well, you learn, first of all, that you are a small fish in a big pond. You know, it takes time with seniority to really get anything done. And you're one of 435 members in the House. You add another 100 in the Senate. You have basically 535 independent contractors. And so in the House, you have to have 218 votes to get anything done. So it comes down to working on relationships and then standing on principle. To me, one of the honors that I had as a result of being on the Armed Services Committee was to, on an annual basis, be able to represent life. By that, I mean the opposition was constantly trying to turn military hospitals into abortion clinics overseas. And so I'd work starting at the Personnel Committee, a full committee, into the House floor, ensuring that our doctors who went in to save the life of our military people would not have to perform abortions. As you know, if somebody gets pregnant and it's out of wedlock and they do want to have that awful procedure, they can come back to the States. But to force other countries to do something that's against their policy, well, fortunately for 10 years, we always won that issue. And to me, that was one of my achievements in being there for 10 years. And, of course, during that whole time, if I can say this, Jack, one of the things, and I've talked about Ann was there all the time supportive. A congressional wife has to give up a part of her husband's life because of everything going on. But Ann and I worked very hard on maintaining our relationship. And after serving over 10 years in Congress, our lives are closer than ever, and I attribute that to the fact that we have a relationship with Jesus Christ.
What are you the proudest of in those 10 years, Jim Ryan?
Well, I would say just that particular issue. One of them would be, of course, representing the 2nd District, but then also, you know, making sure that military hospitals did not become abortion clinics. And I always worked on lower taxes. I eventually lost in 2006 as a result of becoming one of the most, they becoming in that year the most conservative member of Congress out of 435 members on a scale because of the way they do it. I, out of over 100 votes from life to monetary to military, anything else, I had the highest conservative record. But it didn't set well with my district, and it was a year when you had a downturn in terms of support for President Bush, and we ended up losing. But just to do what I had promised I would do, work on lowering taxes, making government smaller, that was one of our goals, and that was one of the goals that was achieved.
What do you miss about being in the U.S. Congress?
Well, I think one of the things I miss is being able to help people. There's lots of different ways you can help them. I miss that. I don't miss all the other stuff that you have to do to get there in terms of raising money. And let me just say this about raising money. I didn't have a problem calling people and asking them for financial assistance to get into office and then to maintain the position in office because I believed in what I was doing. But what I miss most is just being able to help people and explain a lot of what goes on. I mean, there isn't really a book you can read in terms of how Congress works, and so you really need to have, you know, boots on the ground, so to speak, on the House floor to learn what goes on, and then stand on principle. As Ann and I both have said many times, if you don't go to Washington with your principles intact, you're going to be manipulated like a pretzel.
Speaking of learning how Washington works, the animosity today, Jim, between the two sides, what's the solution? Is there hope?
Well, I don't know that there's really an easy solution, and I may offend some of your listeners by the story I'm going to tell you, because I had one of my constituents bring that up to me at a town hall meeting. He said, "Congressman, you are so partisan." I said, "Well, let me ask you, what's an important issue for you?" And, of course, that was at an NRA meeting, a National Rifle Association meeting. And I said, "So let me ask you this. If I had an amendment that came to the floor that would deny your rights as an NRA member, what would you want me to do?" Well, his response was very clear. He said, "I want you to vote against that." And I said, "Once that happens, I'm viewed as a partisan." So you go with the member knowing what the member has agreed to do, and that's what I had agreed to do, was to stand on those issues. So I don't think there's any easy answer. I think what you're looking at, and sometimes is misunderstood, Congress is never going to move fast. You're always going to have very partisan sides. It's become very vindictive, much more so than I recall when I was there. It becomes almost a scorched earth policy, in that if you don't agree with somebody, you're going to burn his character down, and then you're going to destroy him in any way you can. That I totally oppose. But on the other hand, you need principled people there to make a difference in this country.
We're talking to Jim Ryan, the author of Heroes Among Us and Courage to Run. When we come back, we'll ask him about those two books. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Mitsoula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to former Congressman Jim Ryan, who set the world record in July of 66, 3 minutes, 51.3 seconds for the mile. Congressman, what's the biggest thing you want us to take from the book, Heroes Among Us?
That there are wonderful, principled people who gave their lives, many times totally sacrificing their lives, to make this country what it is. I had, during my time in service in Congress, listened to many people identifying athletes as heroes, and I became weary of that. I'm not a hero, even though I've had wonderful success. I was a successful athlete. But a hero is someone that's done something heroic. So our sons, Ned and Drew, with the assistance of the Library of Congress, we dug into a lot of old stories that sometimes get lost. If you walk through the nation's capital, what we call Statuary Hall, you'll see these statues of men and women, two from each state, that have done something in their state heroic. And so we decided that it would be nice to dig into those stories and to give people an understanding of what goes on in this country, that, you know, a well-paid athlete is not a hero. Here are the real heroes. So that's what the book Heroes Among Us is about. It's about genuine heroes through a period of time, often forgotten, maybe not even known about, who give us the opportunity to stand on their shoulders for the great country we have.
And the latest book, Courage to Run, what's that about?
That's a 60-day devotional, which, by the way, if anyone's interested, they can write to P.O. Box 15312, Washington, D.C., and it's available for $25, 2003. Courage to Run is a 60-day devotional, kind of breaking down different things that happened in my personal life, from being cut from the church baseball team to, you know, making the Olympic team to others have great influence on my life. And it covers a 60-day period, and we've had great success with that book, and it's really a book full of encouraging stories for young and old alike.
If you want to learn more about Jim, www.madisonproject.com. Madisonproject.com. Speaking of which, tell us about the Madison Project.
The Madison Project was established before my son and Drew and I took it over, so to speak, and it's really there to help identify conservatives that are running for office, who they are, and how people can support them. One of the things that often is difficult in an election cycle is to find out who a real conservative is. Now, who's a real conservative? We call them full-spectrum conservatives. They're small government, lower taxes, strong military, pro-life. And we dig into the votes for those that are running for office, and we will identify these are only in House and Senate races on the federal side. So, for example, in the cycle ending in 2014, we had 14 candidates that we identified in the House and Senate. So you can go to that website, and you can get updates in terms of what's going on in Congress, but you will also see who we're endorsing. But we then help put what we call boots on the ground in their district, people that will go door-to-door, do whatever they can, because we are, Jack, let me just say this, we are in deep trouble morally in this country with regard to what's going on, but financially as well, and I fear for the next generations. They're going to be saddled with an enormous debt that it's going to be very difficult to recover from. So one of our goals is to restore this country as much as possible to the way the Founding Fathers intended it to be.
One night in 2004, Sports Illustrated invited all of its Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year for the first 50 years to the Waldorf Astoria for a special party. What was that night like, Jim Ryan?
Well, it was very special to be a part of it. I have great admiration knowing that those that were there had made some enormous contribution in sports, and to be able to see them as we all age gracefully was a great thrill. So Ann and I were there, and we shared that experience and got to meet many of the wives and sometimes the children of these particular individuals, and it was a great honor.
When you put your head on the pillow that night, what did you think about?
Well, it's easy to think about great experiences, but I also get the opportunity to thank God that he answered that prayer of a struggling junior high boy that wanted his life to amount to something, and that he gave me great coaches and a wonderful wife. You know, those are answers to prayer that you look back on, especially when you see those achievements, and you realize you did not get there on your own. You had tremendous help, tremendous answer to prayers. You had tremendous people that contributed in many, many ways. Maybe, and when I go to the Kansas Relays, for example, I always like to thank the officials. They're, you know, raking the sand in the long jump pit. They're holding the stopwatches. They're helping organize the people getting ready for a race. Everybody in some way contributes to somebody's success.
You mentioned a while ago about the huge challenges we have in this country. Jim, is the American dream still alive?
I think it is, and that's one of the things that we realize when we do our running camps. Again, Jim Ryan Running Camps, Ryan, R-Y-U-N, running.com. We've done these for over 40 years. We've had about almost 6,000 athletes that have come through. They're primarily of high school age, but you get to see them face-to-face, and they're full of hope. They're strong in terms of where they're going to go. We get to encourage them in a Christian atmosphere. Not everyone that comes is a Christian, but you get to see the face of the next generation. And I want to say, Jack, it's very encouraging to see, you know, their tenacity, their deep abiding trust and faith and willingness to do the work that's necessary to achieve those particular goals they have.
As our time winds down together this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
Well, I'll be very frank about it. Find out who God is, look for his son, Jesus Christ, and pray and believe for big things. One of the things that we see in camp, I think, often is people underestimate the gift that they've been given, and they're afraid of failure. Failure is not a friend, but a failure is a teacher, and you're never going to know just how successful, how wonderful those challenges are, and where you're going to go in life if you let that be your guiding light. Fear of failure. Don't be afraid of it. Go for it. Give it your best. Dream big. Get out of your comfort zone.
Jim Ryan, you're a modern-day Horatio Elger story. Thanks much for sharing your amazing, inspirational story.
Jack, you're wonderful. Thank you for the opportunity.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn.